Bodhisattva's Four Methods of Guidance. The Bodhisattva's Four Methods of Guidance are giving, kind speech, beneficial action, and identity action. Giving means non-greed. Non-greed means not to covet. Not to covet means not to curry favor. Even if you govern the four continents, you should always convey the correct teaching with non-greed. It is to give away unneeded belongings to someone you don't know, to offer flowers blooming on a distant mountain to the Tathagata, or again to offer treasures you had in your former life to sentient beings. Whether it is of teaching or of material, each gift has its value and is worth giving. Even if the gift is not your own, there is no reason to keep from giving. The question is not whether the gift is valuable, but whether there is merit. And in the Diamond Sutra, the second chapter, it said, the Tathagata blesses fearless bodhisattvas with the best of blessings, and the Tathagata entrusts fearless bodhisattvas with the greatest of trusts. So here we are, lovely, a warm day here in Massachusetts, and we are already somewhere in the middle of our Anga. Quite a thing as we enter into this activity of practice, how we begin to slightly come apart. In fact, I think the work of Zen is essentially a work of deconstruction. Dogen talks about non-greed. We might think of our practice as deconstructing these things that we think we are, deconstructing our everyday notions of the world. And as we have mentioned, this is quite a work to undertake. The habit force of the mind, the mind's presentation of the world as if it were something outside of us, is so vivid. And the returns are quite good when, in some way, when we look at this. Reminded of that lovely Woody Allen joke where a man goes to the psychiatrist and says, you know, my brother thinks he's a chicken. And the psychiatrist says, well, why don't you just tell him he's not a chicken? And the man says, well, we need the eggs. So we look at the world as if it were outside of us, and it certainly helps us navigate, helps us pay our bills and go on vacation and plan to come on retreat. But ultimately, terribly unsatisfying. Ultimately, something is quite wrong with this world as it appears. And so this work of deconstruction, to begin to see how the mind works. David Bohm says, the mind creates the world and then says, I didn't do it. So quickly and so vividly we see, and the processing is actually hidden from us. When I look out and see a tree, I'm not aware of the cultural knowledge necessary to construe this as a tree. I'm not aware of the photons bouncing off the tree and streaming into my eye. Not aware that There actually is a blind spot in my eye where I actually can't see anything, and I just fill it in with tree. So as we begin to slow down, as we begin to do not doing, because certainly sitting in meditation is something to do. We are here, body and mind, body, heart, and mind here. All of us going through our changes. When I first began to sit retreats, I imagined that the difficulty was something that would eventually subside. And that as my practice deepened, I would go to some magical world, some Zen world. And slowly, ever so slowly, this indeed is how our life works, ever so slowly, breath by breath, moment by moment. Ever so slowly, I began to see that what I thought was the problem was actually not what I thought it was. And this is the invitation in our practice to be with our problem, to be with our life, because certainly, I think for all of us, our life is a problem that is unmanageable. Other people won't do what we think they should do. Of course, we won't even do what we think we should do. We have these opinions. And mostly we are unaware of our opinion. As we sit in this wonderful gift that has been given to us, the gift of practice. In the gift of sitting still, we can begin to see what was hidden from us. All of these impulses of wanting to fixate things, begin to see to correctly locate the problem. As long as it is outside of us, then we can very righteously spend our life complaining and feeling put upon. But as we begin to see, and this is such a gift of practice, speaking of being truly, truly blessed, truly gifted. The gift, one of the many gifts of practice, is beginning to see, as we were saying last night, to see that as we change, as we transform, the whole world transforms, that we are not simply actors on a stage. But when each human being is born, the whole universe is born. When the Buddha had his awakening, he said, how wonderful, everything has the Buddha nature. So the whole world is transformed, the whole world comes alive, because it is this mutual interaction, this dependent co-arising. The self and the world create each other. So this this wonderful gift, the gift is not your own. So many ways to understand this, but for me, thinking most deeply perhaps is the gift of our life. As far as we know, none of us asked to be born. Though I am reminded of a Sufi teacher, Melissa and I recently heard, who had us imagine throngs of spirits disembodied floating around this globe, and each one longing to have human form, longing to be able to see and taste and feel and touch, so that they could walk this path of being human. So a lovely image that touched me in some way. I think perhaps because so often my life feels difficult, and I so easily forget this most fundamental gift, this most precious gift of being human. And as we have been exploring this practice of giving, this fundamental bodhisattva practice, this fundamental human practice, we begin to see that the idea that we have something that is distinctly ours is actually not true. And if we begin to look at our life in that manner, for me it changes some. If it is not my life that I have to make come out a certain way, then there is some freedom of participating in my life rather than having to make my life. There can be from this place a kind of allowing of trusting this great trust that we have been giving the most precious thing in the world, given a human life, and how can we use it well. So one of the first instructions here on using our life well is to freely give, to be generous in all things. I might say this is an antidote to greed, anger, and ignorance. The antidote, of course, giving, dana, is the first paramita, the first perfection or the first crossing over. The first is giving, the second is ethical conduct, correct conduct. Third is forbearance or patience. I was talking to someone recently whose life has been greatly changed, and she said she was trying to practice patience. And at first I didn't quite understand what she meant, but she said she's trying to see what is next in her life, without rushing off to fill up the hole, without rushing to pull it together. So just as I've been studying this kshanti, forbearance or patience, not one of the paramitas or one of the qualities we speak much of, but to me feeling the aliveness of this quality of patience, of giving ourself time, giving ourself the space not to know. Resisting the urge to get our shit together. And the gift of this retreat is having a time, and whether you're here for one period or for 20 days makes no difference in the possibility of this. Still thinking about what Melissa said in her very first talk about how when we give to someone else, we give to ourself. And when we give to ourself, we give to someone else. So as we sit and appreciate this gift, appreciate this gift that is not our own, that we are encouraged to give away. And so many spiritual teachings have this idea that the more we give, the more we receive. So if we give a little bit, we get a little bit. If we give a lot, we get a lot. And if we give everything, then we hear the bird song. And there is no need to bother with giving or receiving. So encouragement for us all to appreciate the song of the bird. Appreciate the pain in the knees. Appreciate the thoughts rising and chasing each other around, and appreciate the thoughts subsiding. So to receive this gift, to receive each breath, to receive the support of each other. And then whatever arises, to give it away. Whatever arises, to let it be. So this gift that is not our own, we now, moment by moment, have the opportunity to fully give it away. Thank you. So I'm David.
Melissa.
Steve.
Christine.
Ted.
Amy.
Steve.
Holly.
Diane.
So please sit comfortably, and now is our time for investigating together, for sharing different perspectives. What struck you? What questions have arisen? Yeah.
Well, I did love the image of the disembodied spirits, you know, wishing to be human. And it brought to me a sense of, so a lot of our practice is paying attention, right, to the sound of the bird, the feel of the floor, the rice. But it's a kind of an appreciation of it, more than just attention. And so just this image of these, you know, disembodied spirits wishing that they could appreciate the way that we have. It just gave it a different flavor, you know.
Yes.
And it also a little bit like, you know, sometimes when you're just paying attention, it can get into a little bit of like wistfulness, like, oh, this moment's ending, or, you know, like our life it will end and everyone we love will be gone, you know, And so not that, because, you know, there's an acceptance of that and just the pure appreciation of it. So that's what came to me when you said, thank you.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting that So the Sufis, too, think that this human path is the only place we can know God or know love. Mm-hmm. And in this great reflection of self and other, and certainly in the Buddhist tradition, you know, this is the realm where we can wake up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think, too, we want to be a little careful not to force appreciation. Mm-hmm. So if other feelings arise, that's it too. Mm-hmm. You know, that whatever's present, because it's not just the sensory realm that mm-hmm. we're mm-hmm. paying attention to, but everything that happens, thoughts, mm-hmm. emotions. Mm-hmm. So we don't want to push anything away, mm-hmm. but we don't want to fixate on anything either. Mm-hmm. Although if pushing away or fixating arises, then we mm-hmm. also... So it's... It's almost like the appreciation is a little bit of a subtle flavoring mm-hmm. rather than a thing that we have to do. Mm-hmm. You could see how people could get into that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, and how to appreciate even the, I hate this.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. So that we can make appreciation into a fixed thing.
Yeah.
And then we head for that. Mm-hmm. But we can have it as this subtle flavor or... So what's here? How do I appreciate a clenched belly? Mm-hmm. You know, how do I appreciate, I so wish it were mm-hmm. yesterday or tomorrow?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I've been thinking a lot about this appreciation lately because I really notice, you know, how most of the time I don't stop to look at the flowers and hear the birds singing. And all these things, and then you know, I come on retreat, and I'm out walking around, and I'm noticing all the, oh, look at all the flowers and the birds, and, you know, and it's really nice. And I think, you know, well, you know, what exactly is going on here? You know, how do I, you know, appreciate when I'm not appreciating? You know? What am I responsible for bringing this appreciation thing?
Plug it around.
One more thing.
One more thing on your
feeling bad enough without getting appreciation for you. So I have been just sort of concentrating on particularly on retreat, just kind of maintaining an open awareness, you know, mm-hmm. and letting things come to me, you know.
Right.
And I'm just responsible for, you know, trying to maintain some presence and not get so caught up in this thinking that I do about self all the time, you know. Mm-hmm. How am I, you know, what am I going to, you know, when is the enlightenment going to show up, you know, blah, 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 why am I always screwing things, you know, and just all these endless tight loops and if I can just, you know, be aware of that in a larger way and right. spend a little time, you know, listening for the sounds and feeling my body and just opening up a little bit, it comes forward.
Mm-hmm.
Like Rubin talks about, you know, mm-hmm. the 10,000 things will come forward, and I don't, you know, there's no effort in appreciating them when they come forward. It's, you know, it's beautiful. Mm-hmm. Beautiful flower suddenly comes forth. Whoa.
Well, and I think that's, for me, this quality of patience, of not trying to make our practice happen, of not trying to make appreciation happen, because anything we try to make is extra. And then, of course, we can appreciate when we're doing the extra, too. But I love... So there's something about not doing our practice, not whatever we make up as on our checklist. You know, how do we set that down? Yeah.
I think you just hit on what I was going to ask about. That was what really struck me was patience. And how it relates, sort of indicating the tense, letting the way be the way.
Mm-hmm.
And,
When you leave the way to the way.
Leaving, right, mm-hmm. Leaving the way to the way, leaving us to us, leaving mm-hmm. others to others. And yeah, it does, that seems to be one of those keys to gratitude, to appreciation, that just being open to it all.
Yeah, I'm struck by so there's this Chinese phrase, wei wu wei, doing not doing, that we've been referring to, and it's subtle. It's like thinking non-thinking that Dogen talks about. He talks about both. When we're doing this practice of Zazen, we actually are enacting this thing that we're talking around, appreciation, patience, because we're saying, stop, sit down, shut up. I mean, we're really doing that. That's an activity. But it's an activity that's a non-activity, because we're not really doing anything when we're here. Well, we're doing a lot of stuff, but you know, then eventually it dies off, or somebody said to me recently that she'd finally gotten bored with the repetitive thoughts, because she saw that over many years, they were always the same. Just like, and it gets boring. So that this is what body and mind drop away. It is a direct result, you might say, although that's a funny way to talk about it, of this pausing, stopping. So it's another way of talking about it, that we actually are, that's our only activity, is just to pause. And it can be for a millisecond, you know, but normally we don't have time to pause. You know, we've got too much to do. So when this opportunity arises to be able to sit here together, we learn how to pause. And it's quite amazing. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, Christine.
In the pausing that I've been able to do here since this started, recognition has been welling up in me that I have spent a lifetime making things happen and pushing myself around and letting the space for it to be a trust is emerging. And I feel it very deeply.
Yeah. And you speak for all of us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so precious. And all of us have been pushing ourselves around all our life. But until we see that, you know, we think it's normal. Well, I have to do it. I have to push all the time. You know, we can't even see it because we're on to the next thing. And so this opportunity of pausing and the possibility that there's some other choice we can make in a moment, what could be more important?
Can I say one more thing?
Yeah.
Please.
When I came on Sunday, I was going to just stay for the afternoon, and I had all this important work I had to do. And in talking with you, it was like, this is my most important, and everything will take care of itself. And when I got in Monday morning, I didn't know how. And I got this thing done, like, in 20 minutes that I thought was going to take me hours.
The habit force of doing is so strong in all of us that we need something to whack us on the head to say, hey, stop. I mean, it really is. That's why you hear these teachings from 1,000 years ago where people actually hit people and, you know, and shouted. And how many years have we been getting glimpses of this. Even those of us who have been sitting for a really long time, that's what you really are, part of a group of people who have recognized that enough, and yet can't do it by myself. It's too hard, because we're so, you know, entrained. So this is very subtle group encouragement as well, the pausing. We need each other. We can't do this alone. So when you say what you said, this is something that is later on in the text. It has countless benefits, just the recognition and the naming of it. And then the living, you don't even have to name it, the living from it has all these reverberations. You've already felt that. And it's also, it reminds me, you know, we talk about this a lot, the original word for mindfulness, it was translated as mindfulness in English, in Pali is sati, and the real meaning of it is to remember. And you know, and right? It's like, oh, right. What have I forgot? I was looking somewhere else. Yeah. So that's what we're practicing here together. Deep breaths.
Yeah, Holly, welcome.
I was sitting here listening to David, and a heck of a jumble of feelings were coming up for me that had been sort of squatting below the surface for days, and I knew they were there, but I didn't know how to get to them, and I felt like I had, you know, like was failing in some way to access feelings, or, you know, just you know, even when I'm turning away from the feelings, that's part of it too. And, you know, that sort of protection of this thing that doesn't exist, you know, in a way. And feeling kind of pissed off about the fact that I'm turning away. It's just, like I said, a jumble. And feeling put upon over the whole damn thing. But a feeling that was lurking, that appeared when you were speaking, it was really sad and a bummer and joyous at the same time. And you know, the question, I guess, is maybe it's not a question, but an observation that, you know, the past few days of struggle, feeling like I should be feeling something or I shouldn't be feeling something, the generosity is the holly, you know, of it. It's all very holly.
Well, and the teaching is that it's perfectly holly. Right.
And just to add to that, one thing is this. I'm always like this. Oh, and this is a holly a lot of the time. And so
the hands open wide, the arms open
hello.
Wide.
Hello.
Oh, I see.
Mm-hmm. Instead of say something.
The holding back. Well, you know, I'm struck about how similar this is to what you said, the David Bohm quote. Can you say that again?
The mind creates the world and then says, I didn't do it. Isn't that great?
It's just, you just gave an example. That's so great.
The other thing David Bohm said is that we think we're free and we're not because we have all these assumptions, and that he advocated coming together with a group of people like 30 or more and just spending time together. And he said if the group was too small, it wouldn't work because people would get along. that he intentionally wanted to create a container where someone would really piss you off on some fun, you know, this emotional imperative, he called it. If you say that one more time! And I think here in our Zazen, we're creating conflict.
Yeah.
You know, guaranteed, as we look inward, we're going to come up with something that's totally unacceptable. And that if we don't encounter that, we can't move ahead. That we can pretend we're free. But this habit force, and it is again and again. You know, Christine, I'm so touched by your saying that, because I think when we really remember it, it certainly brings tears to my eyes every time. And like, not like, oh yeah, yesterday I really got it and it was touching, and now it's pretty, I'm now. But every time, I think, when we as human beings remember the preciousness and the possibility, it's like, oh, of course.
Well, this is the thing that ties together what we started out with about appreciation and about, you know, not making that into a fetish, but when this appreciation arises, there is sadness in it, often, if it's really true appreciation, because it's a combination of, you know, oh, why, the mind does come in and say, why didn't I see this before? And the Japanese have a word for it that we don't have in English, aware, which means this quality of poignancy when you actually see the flower. It breaks your heart. It's not like, beautiful flower, that's so nice. You know, it's like, whoa. And tears spring to the eyes. And is it sadness? Is it happiness? It's the heart melting. So Trungpa Rinpoche, Chogyam Trungpa, used to say that if you're really doing this practice fully, your heart breaks. You know, and the true heart of the warrior, he used to talk about warriors of practice, is the broken-hearted one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like the tender-hearted.
The tender-hearted
warriors.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this is you know, we pause, we sit, we have this container, and then all hell breaks loose. I was once at a workshop with Robert Ply and Coleman Barks. They were leading it in quotation marks, and there were probably 100 people, and they just let this happen. They must have been doing the David Bohm thing. It was so awful. I thought, who's in charge of this? And it was like, just, they read some poetry, and then they started this conversation with the group, and people started fighting with each other. 10 people left and yelling, and I was thinking, what is going on here? And I called David and told him how terrible it was. He said, oh, I think they must be doing that thing, that group thing.
Something good is going on. Oh, you're so lucky.
And it was true. That night, everything like that, you know, just really totally, like 100 people just were in love with each other. He didn't do anything. He just, Robert Bly was mostly in charge. He just pulled back.
But that's that patience. Yeah. You know, how do we let, you know, how do I let David be David and do his crazy thing one more time? It's so embarrassing.
You speak my heart.
I think it's bad for you. And the judgment comes up so strongly. And sometimes other people help us with the judgment.
You idiot.
But this great loving patience, this Dogen said parental mind, because there's a kind of patience like, all right, you know, could this talk almost over? But this loving, expectant, great. And it does get back to faith and trust. But, you know, what you were saying, Steve, there is this, because it doesn't make sense that it would be okay. You know, in the moment of, I've got to say this, I've got to do this, but we can maybe wait just a little bit longer before we go into the follow it down the rabbit hole. Maybe have just a little tiny bit more, just one more breath before I totally shut down. And in that breath, who knows, a whole world, whole lifetimes of possibility. Yeah, one more here.
Well, it would be nice to use the word deconstruct. And Melissa, you were just talking about, you know, the beautiful flower. I think for some of us, one of the things I would like to be able to deconstruct is whatever allows me to no longer appreciate anything for its pure sake. Been doing natural history for a long time. This is a wonderful time of year for people who are natural historians in the north. But everything has to have a name to it. Everything, every sound. There's no sound that I hear, no bird song that I can hear and appreciate just for the beauty of it. It's what is it?
Yeah.
There'll be a new, I can travel somewhere and see a plant of what is it? A couple months ago, I started taking drawing classes, and that opened up a whole new way of seeing things, tone, texture, value.
Yeah.
But, it immediately for me becomes something that I can use. I know I'm seeing things differently. Everything I see now is different, but I tend to, is this what's meant by gaining mind? How can I use it in my next rudimentary drawing?
This is exactly it. You're really penetrating the matter here.
And there's a really important thing here. You can do the construction business. You're in the construction business. We're all masters, master builders.
Right.
All of us, really good at it. You cannot be in the deconstruction business. It's not yours to do. It's what Steve was saying about receiving. Dogen's really clear about that. This is about receiving, not about making things. So a lifetime of being the master builder, the master identifier, the master constructor, is that onrushing. It's what Christine was talking about, the onrushing habit mind, right? So in Zazen itself, deconstruction happens, but you don't do it. You allow it to be done. You allow yourself to be undone. Just by sitting down, getting into the posture, that's it. And then the mind of Zazen goes with you everywhere. But that's why we sit. It's not just, oh, good idea, okay, I'll pause. I'll appreciate it. You can make them into fixations. You cannot do it. You're great at doing. And as David said at the very beginning of the talk, we don't want to undo the capacity to do either, right? Because we do need to, get in the car and read the mail.
And thank you for washing the dishes so often.
Right.
Yes. Very grateful that I am not doing the dishes. No.
Well, some teachers say that. Says, don't do the dishes to do the dishes. I've heard him say that 20 years ago. And
right.
I, what?
Yeah. But as long as you do the dishes while you're not doing it, it's cool with me.
But this was the teaching he was totally pointing to. You do what you do, and then you let yourself be undone.
Yeah. I think that's a wonderful place to stop for this moment. Thank you.